because we are in week six and the fight continues, we do need extra volunteers this Saturday coming up. So we're hoping to see all of you wonderful activists and militants of hope to join us on Saturday as volunteers as well. Welcome, everyone. Our Truthful Tuesday teaching, part of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. Yesterday, we took part in an action in over 30 states. We are becoming this new and unsettling force. And together, we are confronting the distorted moral narrative that maintains that poverty, systemic racism, militarism, and environmental destruction. And just as we have done every Tuesday during the 40 days of action, today we are going to deepen our understandings of these issues through popular education. We are honored to be joined tonight by Savina Martin, Pam and Michael, and Scott Douglas. And because we're shifting the moral narrative and calling for a revival, tonight we start with some reflections from one of our campaign co-chairs, our dear sister in struggle, Reverend Dr. Liz Teal Harris. I am as excited to hear my sister speak too. If you are here with us in Washington, D.C., or tuning in from around the country, online, on social media, take a moment to let people know. If you use social media, pull out your phone right now. I want to see people's phones come out. Take a photo of yourself. There are beautiful people in the audience. Take a photo with them. Don't let them just be a stranger. Share the live stream and let folks know that you're here. Invite them to join this movement. It's never too late to join. Also remember to add the Poor People's Campaign hashtag. And if you are here right now, remember to just check in with your location and say that you're at the National Mall. It is my pleasure to be here. My name is Manolo, and I am from a small island in the Caribbean, Dominican Republic. As a child, my family was forced to migrate to this country. We were also forced into a livelihood of poverty that was imposed on us because we were black, because we were immigrants, not because it was given to us by God. Not because my parents were lazy or didn't work hard enough. Not because they didn't take care of their children or didn't give us the right values. We were imposed poverty by a system that imposes poverty on millions of people in this country. 140 million of my brothers and sisters who are black, white, Latino, Asian, Native American, and of colors and groups that aren't even mentioned usually. And I'm here with the Poor People's Campaign for one main reason. And I say it every day and I repeat it every week at this campaign. I'm here because I'm tired of walking alone. And I'm here because I want to walk with all of you who are present, with all of you who are part of this movement in this country and in the global movement of the poor. Only when we learn to walk together will we be ready to challenge the system. Will we be ready to strike from the bottom of our hearts at what is an heartless system. So with that, I say that this is what our Truthful Tuesdays are about. It's about speaking truth to power. There's an elder in our movement. Some say he's gone, but he's present with us every day. And he said that we need to make fighters into thinkers and thinkers into fighters. That is our objective and that is our mission here today. A little over 50 years ago, when the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and others called for this Poor People's Campaign, they were seeing that the triple evils of poverty, racism, and war were enmeshed and would require a new leadership, the leadership of the poor, us, to unsettle the nation and bring forward a revolution of values and deep social transformation. The theme for this week, A New and Unsettling Force, is drawn from a speech where King talks about the significance of this leadership of the poor. Listen for it as I read from what he said. The dispossessed of this nation, the poor, both white and Negro, live in a cruelly unjust society. They must organize a revolution against the injustice, not against the lives of the persons who are the fellow citizens, but against the structures through which the society is refusing to take means which have been called for and which are at hand to lift the load of poverty. The only real revolutionary, people say, is a man who has nothing to lose. These are millions of people in this country who have very little or even nothing to lose. If they can be helped to take action together, they will do so with a freedom and a power that will be a new and unsettling force in our complacent national life. Beginning in the new year, we will be recruiting 3,000 of the poorest citizens from 10 different urban and rural areas to initiate and lead a sustained, massive, direct action movement in Washington. Yeah. Sounds about right. Those who choose to join this initial 3,000, this nonviolent army, this Freedom Church of the Poor, will work with us for 3 months to develop nonviolent action skills. This was delivered in December of 1967. King was assassinated in the middle of the planning of this campaign, but leaders from across the nation came together, bringing together 6,000 people across racial and ethnic lines to occupy Washington, D.C. in Resurrection City. Those who were encamped in D.C. were joined by 50,000 others 50 years ago on a day like today, Juneteenth of 1968, for Solidarity Day. And we're here 50 years later feeling a bit of the mud too, but having come a long way. And tonight's teach-in falls on this big anniversary of the original campaign. We are here again on the National Mall, again together across lines of difference, again saying that it is possible to end the enmeshed evils of poverty, systemic racism, and the war economy. And now, 50 years later, we know that environmental devastation is a part of those evils, all of which are upheld by distorted moral narratives. Our big march is this coming Saturday, the 23rd, and we hope that each and every one of you will join us for that in DC or online. Right now, and I am so excited for this, we have a powerful lineup of educators, but educators who are militants, who are organizers, all coming out of their state coordinating committees as leaders of the Poor People Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. And we're going to start with a song, so I invite my dear friends Jacob and Sharon, who will lead us.
So we also have Reverend Anika and Monica and Ciara that are going to join us. We got a whole crew. We're all going to sing together tonight.
Is this one on? Yeah, it is. Oh, wow. I have to get really close to this. I'm going to just hold it. So we're going to sing a song called Which Side Are You On, which I'm going to sort of ground a little bit, give a little bit of the history of this song. We're going to sing it two ways, I think. We're going to sing it the old way, like the original version, which I'm going to lead, and then there is like a newer version, which Sharon knows, which is going to teach you guys, which is much more lively. But this song was written by a woman named Florence Reese, who was a wife of a coal miner, the daughter of a coal miner. She raised 10 children. I'm not exactly sure, but I believe at least half of them went on to be coal miners. Her husband, Sam, was an organizer in Harlan County, which was one of the worst anti-labor counties in Kentucky. And one night, for the 9 years that the Harlan County miners were striking, the sheriff and his deputies, while off duty, paid off by the coal company, broke into their house to beat Sam to death. He had gotten a tip and escaped, but they roughed up her and her kids And then after they left, she ripped the calendar down and wrote these words to this song. And she became very popular amongst the miners, and she went on to be a pretty prolific folk singer and labor singer. So the song goes, which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? You guys are very good at that. All right. So I'll sing verses, and then you guys come in on that. They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son, and I'll stick with the Union till every battle's won. Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? My mama was a worker. She's in the clouds and air. And when I'm with the Union, I know that she is there. Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? You guys are great out there, too.
All right. So y'all ready to sing with us as well? We just sang that up, but I need you, to, if you're able, to stand up for this one.
Woo!
A little more, quicker.
Woo!
We know that music is something that grounds us in these movements, and we know it teaches us a history, as Jacob has taught us here tonight. And this song calls upon, it's within the tradition, it's taking that anthem and bringing it up to date, and some folks in a newer generation rewrote those words and called out some of the freedom fighters that have led the way, have paved our way, that we stand on their shoulders and continue to teach us in these struggles. And so it's, which side are you on? And at the part where we say, which side are you on? You're gonna say, does anyone know? We're on the freedom side, okay? So we'll teach it here. It goes like this. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? We're on the freedom side. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Ella Baker was a freedom fighter. She taught us how to fight. Now we're gonna fight all day and night until we get it right. Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my freedom fighter, and he taught us how to fight.
Hey, what?
Now we gon' fight all day and night until we get it right. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on?
Marsha P. Johnson was a freedom fighter, and she taught us how to fight.
Now we go fight all day and night until we get it right. Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side
are you on?
General Baker was a freedom fighter. He taught us how to fight. Now we gon' fight all day and night until we get it right. Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Mother Jones was a freedom fighter. She taught us how to fight. Now we go fight all day and night until we get it right. Let me hear ya. Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? We're on the freedom side. Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side? Which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
What side are we on? What side are we on? We are on the freedom side of the poor who refuse to be erased from history. We refuse to be silenced. We refuse to be moved away. We are here in the nation's capital, and we won't be moved. No mud, no cops, no force on earth can move the force of the people. Now, I am so excited to have here, like I said before, our dear sister in struggle, Reverend Dr. Liz Teal Harris. She is director of the Cairo Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice at Union Theological Seminary. And we are very blessed to have her as co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. Tonight, she offers us a moral framing for our teaching.
Good evening. How are folks doing? Good evening, good evening. So it is amazing to be here this evening. We are truly blessed. And looking out at the folks that are gathered in this tent, in this 2018 Resurrection City, it just feels like the time for freedom is now. So we're very pleased that folks are joining us online, and they need to know that a powerful group of people from the states have started to converge on Washington, D.C. So I want to actually shout out to the different states that are in the tent. If people could... could say where you're from. California, Kansas, Virginia, Florida, Maryland, New York. I can't even hear it. So many places. North Carolina. South Carolina, Arkansas, Pennsylvania, Utah, Washington State, Colorado, yes, I was trying, New Jersey, New York, Texas, I don't know what that was, Oregon, Ohio, Wisconsin, Missouri, Alaska. Yeah, let's clap for Alaska. And I think Barbados, fantastic. So it, Vermont. Pennsylvania, Missouri, St. Louis. We're not saying Missouri, we're just saying St. Louis. Well, as folks know, hundreds of people, Arizona, fantastic. People are converging here at this tent, here at this Capitol, as we get ready for a powerful week that is the culmination of six powerful weeks of amazing organizing, of nonviolent civil disobedience, nonviolent organizing, nonviolent educating. So now what I want to do is, if you have been participating in nonviolent civil disobedience over the past 6 weeks, please raise your hand. And let's give those folks a huge round of applause. If you have been participating in education over the past 6 weeks, raise your hand. And let's give those folks a huge round of applause. If you have learned and sung a couple of new songs over the past 6 weeks, raise your hand. Raise both hands. Give us a wave. And let's give us all a huge round of applause. So this teach-in is connected to the teach-ins that have been happening across the country for the 6 weeks. It's also the beginning of some time that we have as leaders of a budding movement in states across the country to get together, exchange our experiences, learn from each other, and figure out how we're going to put one step in front of the other as we build a moral movement that can change the direction that this country is going in. And so it is amazing to have everyone here assembled. Just so folks know, tomorrow in the morning we'll have more of introductions, we'll have more framing. In the afternoon we'll be doing an organizing training and some canvassing in the community. On Thursday there will be another time to do action together at that Capitol, make our voices heard. On Friday there will be workshops and cultural events. And on Saturday, all roads lead to this plot of grass and this tent, because we will show this country the voices, the stories, and the demands of the real heroes and heroines of this nation. Folks that are coming up out of homeless encampments, folks that are coming up uninsured, folks that are coming up undocumented but unafraid, and we're all coming together, linking arms and saying, somebody has been hurting our people and it's gone on for far too long, and we won't be silent anymore. So I want to do a little bit of recognition, and then I'm going to jump into the framing. I know I've used most of my time on this, but I think there are some folks in this tent that were here 50 years ago. And I think we need to honor those that have come before. And so if people can give some deep appreciation and love to Annie Chambers, Reverend Annie Chambers and Carlos, folks that were in the 1968 Poor People's Campaign. Folks should know the kind of commitment of Reverend Chambers. She gave birth to a boy, Martin, on the day of the march, dropped that baby off with her dad, and came and protested for justice. And so we link arms with you and take the next step forward with you all and everyone that has fought for justice in this country around the world. God bless you all. May we be as committed as you all are. So as I was thinking a little bit about this evening, I was reading the news. And you don't really need to read the news to know that things aren't doing so well. But just today, the House proposed a budget that slashes $537 billion for Medicare. A budget that slashes $1.54 trillion from Medicaid. This is a death sentence on many of us and many more millions of people across this country. And that's on top of HHS warehousing 11,000 children at the border. That's on top of cutting 7 million children off of healthcare through CHIP. That's on top of raising the rents of some of the poorest people in our nation who are living in subsidized housing. We are saying that is enough. You can oppress us no more. Because we know about the power of the poor in history. The power of the poor to end slavery. The power of the poor to win workers' rights. The power of the poor to win women's rights. And the power of the poor to build a multiracial, racial, intergenerational, across geography campaign like we're building today. So, that's right. So I was reading then the Bible, because I do that sometimes. And what came to me was Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And so Jesus comes to a crowd of people. He comes onto a mountainside and he sits down. And then he says to the people gathered, "Blessed are the poor in breath. For theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are those who fight for justice, for they will be called God's children." And then it continues and says, "You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bushel. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify this world. I think this passage came to me because I was thinking about all of us who are converging here. And the message that I have and the moral framing that I bring is we have to let our light shine. We have to show to this world that there are people out there willing to stand up and fight for justice. Because over the past 6 weeks, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people have said, we are the Poor People's Campaign. We are calling for a national moral revival to turn the tide towards justice. So thank you. Thank you for being those lights. Thank you for shining in these dark days. We know we can win because we have the power to do so.
Are we going to let the power of the people shine?
Yeah.
Are we going to let it shine?
Yeah.
Amen to that. Ashe.
Ashe.
Now I would like to introduce our brother Scott Douglas. He is an educator. He's a native of Nashville, Tennessee, a proud graduate of Nashville's Pearl High School. He attended the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where he co-founded the University of Tennessee Black Student Union in 1967.
Yes.
He served as executive director of the Southern Organizing Committee for Economic and Social Justice under the leadership of Ann Braden and Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth. As Southern Regional Program Officer for the Partnership for Democracy Foundation, and as the first environmental justice grassroots organizer for the Sierra Club. Mr. Douglas is now the executive director of the Greater Birmingham Ministries, an interfaith, multiracial organization that provides emergency services to families in economic crisis while assisting low-income families empower themselves and their communities through organizing based upon participatory, transparent, and democratically accountable inclusiveness. Brother Scott.
Well, thank you very much, Milano. I appreciate that. Earlier, we asked what states people were from, and everybody from Alabama, raise your hand. Actually, that's incorrect. Some of you didn't. As of November 2016, we're all in Alabama now. if you don't think so, the same attorney general who was conducting those devilish deeds on the border of warehousing children and splitting families and spitting in the face of God was our former U.S. Senator. And he comes from a state that in 2011 passed HB 56, the hateful anti-immigrant law. And the sponsors of that anti-immigrant law said, we want to put so much fear in them, they will self-deport. That is the operating theory of what he's doing today. And the same legislature, that same session, passed a voter suppressive photo ID law. Even though they couldn't prove nobody ever tried to vote twice. You know how hard it is to get people to vote one time, right? How in the heck are people trying to vote twice? So the same forces that operate to suppress people of color votes at the same time come out against the immigrant, the alien, the stranger, the neighbor in our land are the same forces. And this is what we have to think about as we go forward. And I call it thinking states. I don't mean the state of your thinking. I mean to think about your state. Because that's why we in all these capitals across the United States. That is a national struggle when we weave together a struggle across the states. And for those of us in the South, we got to think southern states. And we have to not yield to the clarion call of the naysayers, the doubters, who say, Amen. This is not possible. Well, without struggle, nothing is possible. And we have to struggle to win. And they are not overwhelming forces, y'all. We got the numbers. We got, if you don't count poor people in the lead, we got the numbers. Poor people are the numbers. And guess what? Our army's growing. So if victory goes to the fastest growing army, then victory belongs to us. But we've got to put our folks in the lead. And I begin to finish by saying this, is that we must bridge, overcome intentional division with purposeful unity. We got to be strategic and think in a time frame for overwhelming, conclusive victory. And what I mean by this, we got midterm elections coming up. We got to intensify the vote. And Alabama has already demonstrated under the leadership of African-American women in December 2017, we can outpoll the pollsters. We can outshow up the pollsters. We can outshow out the pollsters, and we can do it. But we got to do it again. And finally this, Alabama, on this very mall, when we came, other people came to Alabama here, and the struggle in 1964 and 65, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, what were we doing? Alabama was appealing to the nation, the Constitution of the United States, and world moral indignation to intervene in Alabama. And the Congress intervened in Alabama. And in 65, the Voting Rights Act, the Congress intervened in Alabama. But as December 7, 2017 showed you, when we showed up and showed out, this time, like the who's that? The sisters said, this time we do it. We got to do it for ourselves. When we dial 911 in Washington D.C. today, there is no answer. The states must rescue the nation. Thank you very much.
We are a new and unsettling force. Do you agree with me?
Yes!
Are we not a nonviolent army of 140 million poor people in this country?
Yes!
With nothing to lose?
Yes!
And everything to gain?
Yes!
Well, I'm equally excited to introduce our next educator, my sister Pam McMichael. She is one of the tri-chairs of the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign and lives in Lowville, Kentucky. She is a former director of the Highlander Research and Education Center, a founding co-director of Southerners on New Ground, and serves on the national leadership team of Showing Up for Racial Justice. Sister Pam?
Good evening. Thank you, Manola, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. I'm really honored to be up here with these fine folks. Some I've known, some I met today and instantly loved, and some I've known a long time and admired a long time. And please let me indulge me for a moment to send some mad love to the Kentucky Poor People's Campaign. Thank you. And really good to be with all of you here in this tent and to everybody who's tuning in online. To lift up how I see that we are a new and unsettling force coming together, I'd like to paint a few pictures of some of our work in Kentucky, which I'm sure is not unlike campaigns in your own state. At our third action with the theme of the war economy and militarism, we had a die-in at the governor's mansion, and our ages ranged from 18 to 75. And the 18-year-old was doing direct action for the very first time in his life, and the 75-year-old was part of the 1968 Poor People's Campaign like you. This is a new and unsettling force. I've tried chairs with two women in different parts of Kentucky, Tana Fogle from Lexington and Reverend Megan Houston from Bowling Green. We communicate daily, and a year ago, I did not know them. And in fact, on most of our coordinating committee, most of us did not know each other a year ago. This is a new and unsettling force. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when the people you've been organizing with for years all show up, and there's all kinds of new people, too. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when people continue to come from different parts of the state each week, every week, and new people come each week in blistering hot sun and stay. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when people are willing in unprecedented numbers, and many for the first time, to take a street, to occupy a rotunda, or keep the Capitol doors open with their physical bodies. Because as in Kentucky, we can't enter except for two by two, even to pray. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when people in Indiana are chained to the governor's gates and on Facebook sending solidarity greetings to those of us occupying the rotunda in Frankfort that night. Shout out to Indiana. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when people live in states where the largest cities are not our capital and we still flock by the hundreds to the Capitol on a Monday when the legislation is not even in legislators are not even in session. You know we're building a new and unsettling force when a state police officer lowers his voice and says, "Really, deep down, I admire you all, I really do." Or when a state worker catches you and asks, "Where can I get a t-shirt? My supervisor has told me I can't come out and join you all, but he can't stop me from wearing a t-shirt to work." Hallelujah. I'm in this work because of my love for people, my profound desire to live in a society so drastically different from the one we live in. I've been tight wallet, cut back between jobs hungry, but not hungry, but I know and love people who have and are. I have never been to prison, but I know and love people who have and are. I do have a roof over my head, but I know and love people who don't, or at times haven't. I never served in the military, but I know and love veterans who suffer from PTSD without support from our government for their recovery. This is why I'm in this work. I'm in this work because I lost a mother way too soon from damage to her lungs from work in a factory, and I can only believe that if that factory had been unionized, the health standards in that factory would have been much higher, and my mother might be here today. I don't know the immigrant children being brutally snatched from the arms of their parents, but they are my children, and they are yours. I am so grateful to be in this work with so many people of faith and religious leaders standing up to take on a Christian nationalism that is putting forth such mean, hate-filled public policy while claiming a Christ who consistently said the least among us. Yes. Going forward, our work is to not let ourselves or other people go small. Around us, many people are overwhelmed, wanting to hunker down and just focus on what's right around them, especially when white privilege and class privilege allows them to do so. We cannot let our world get small. The intersectional fusion of this campaign is critical to expanding our own and other people's thinking. We need to keep pushing it out through conversations and educational activities to deepen our learning and learning how to work together across our differences. We are called in this moment to take time to build authentic relationships. We have been in fast-paced motion, but these are not transactional moments, are they? These are relationship-building moments, and we have to take time to do them. How many of you have new people in your phone from being in this campaign just the last 6 weeks? How many have new people? Hang on to each other. Hang on to them. Nurture that relationship. Well, you spend a long night on a cold marble floor with somebody you met 7 days ago, you are forever bound together. I come from a long line of quilters. And there's a stitch you can do when you're in a hurry that hems a pair of pants in a crisis and that will work for you. But quilting, now that's a stitch that you put in that takes time, that's strong, that can withstand whatever you throw at it. We are called to do that kind of stitching. We are stitching kente cloth next to the scraps from a coal miner's work shirt. We are stitching modern, colorful fabrics next to old feed sack cloth. We are taking that material from the baby's quilt and stitching it next to our grandmother's house coat. It's that kind of stitching that hold that will carry us through the next phases of this campaign and to building a new movement. In the coming weeks and months, I encourage us to take time to reflect. What did we learn? What lessons are there for us? What landmines did we trip over, and how do we address them so we are stronger going forward? How do we expand our leadership base? All those new people in our Rolodex, how do we bring them in closer? What communities did we miss, and how do we bring them in more strongly? Political education committees across the country, those committees need to expand, and your work is not done. We have a bunch of work ahead of us in the coming period for education and organizing. And one last task, we need to thank people. We need to thank each other and thank everyone who supported us in these 40 days of action. I encourage us to take time to celebrate. Yes, these 40 days are a beginning and not a stop. And let's lift up and celebrate what we have accomplished so far, because it is tremendous. I encourage continuing to ground in the principles of this campaign. In Kentucky, in every training, we take time to read and talk about the fundamental principles. Some folks have read and discussed them in pairs and large group 8 times now. But the principles give us grounding, and as one woman said just Monday, they give me a language to talk to my family, a language I didn't have before. And plan next steps. We will be talking with each other and hearing from national campaign and working together to develop and be thinking about your next steps and plan some of them. For us in Kentucky, we have invited the governor to come to a listening with the poor people of Kentucky. Now, some of the press is calling it a dialogue. But we all understand the difference between a dialogue and a listening, don't we? We invited our governor to a listening. Finally, it is helpful to remember that going forward will look different in the coming period. Perhaps it's helpful to think of it as building a house, brick by brick. We have put down this fantastic, amazing foundation, and now we're adding on. The house will look different as we go forward, but it will be much more, and it's the foundation we've built that holds it all up. And our work is to continue. The power of this campaign is the magnitude of it, the alignment of so many states in motion at the same time, and we need to keep up that magnitude. I want to close with the words of Black lesbian feminist poet and essayist Audre Lorde, who, upon learning that she had cancer, wrote that what she regretted most was her silences. So she wrote about that, and she wrote about speaking. And here's a couple of short quotes. "And when we speak, we are afraid our words will not be heard nor welcomed. But when we are silent, we are still afraid. So it is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. And the speaking will get easier and easier. And you will find you have fallen in love with your vision, which you may never realize you had. And you will lose some friends and lovers and realize you don't miss them. And the new ones will find you and cherish you. And you will still flirt and paint your nails, dress up and party. And at last you'll know with unsurpassing certainty that only one thing is more frightening than speaking your truth, and that is not speaking it. So I invite, implore, and encourage us all, speak." Thank you.
We refuse to be silent.
All right.
We are not going anywhere. Why? Because we are the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. That's right, my sister. And with that, we have our last educator of the night, Sister Savina Martin. She is a revolutionary minister whose life work has been organizing the poor. She's organized with the National Union of the Homeless, She's a poverty scholar at the Cairo Center. She is part of the University of the Poor and a tri-chair for the Massachusetts Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. She grew up in Roxbury, Massachusetts, during the height of the 1968 riots, after the assassination of Dr. King. Roxbury is a small, mixed African-American, Cape Verdean, Latinx community just outside of the greater Boston. It was there where she would witness her community burning. And it was there where she would make choices and decisions which led her to her activism. Impacted by military service, trauma, and homelessness, she began challenging the city of Boston around a lack of affordable housing for women and children. By 1986, she joined the National Union of the Homeless and became president of the Boston chapter. The National Union of the Homeless was led by current and formerly homeless men and women, fed up with the shelter system conditions and demanded dignity and fairness for all. Her collective engagement with the Union of the Homeless led to the mass abandoned building takeovers. In Roxbury, community mothers protested vacant property and was able to solidify one of the vacant homes and turn it into a space for homeless single women recovering from drug addiction. Over time, this house was renamed after Savina. The women continued to fight with the city and organize among homeless addicts in recovery that led to marches and rallies at the State House advocating for more treatment beds and improved delivery of service for women and homeless veterans between 1987 and 1991. Today, 29 years later, the Home for Women is still actively providing a space for women in recovery. So please welcome this great revolutionary minister, Savina.
Shake it off, stand up, stand up, come on, stand up, shake it off, shake it off. We went through 40 days of nonviolent moral fusion, direct action. And we are here today because we know what? We are going forward together. Forward together. And I just want to lift all of you because you know we know that something is wrong in this system. Something is wrong. And just like I had to survive, you have to survive. So we are survivors together that are gonna turn this system upside down. And we proved that already. We already showed them that. And boy, did we make a lot of friends. And some of the friends I had never made before because I was getting calls that senators wanted to meet with us. Imagine that. But no, on our terms, we went through 40 days in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is a hard place to organize. But there are some fantastic organizers in Massachusetts. And let me give a shout out to some of my Massachusetts folks that are here right now. David and Sue and Kendall, they're sitting there quiet. The first week, just like us, we focused on women and children, right? We focused on poverty, and then we went and sat in the State House. But our first week, we went to block the road. I think we all really blocked the road that week. I remember we all blocked the road. But the police in Boston they refused to arrest us that week, right? And so then we just decided that we would march down the road, and we did. We made our statement. We had to, you know, through this process, we took good care of each other, didn't we? We made collective decisions. There was no big I's and no little U's. We all came together to do this together, right? One sound, one voice, one mind, right? We did it. So we blocked that road, and then we turned it right around, heading into week two, right? Lincoln's systemic racism. Then we did the same thing, but this time we sat in on the State House. And I think, Sue, you got arrested that day, didn't you? You just sat there. Sue is from Salem, Massachusetts. We have people coming in from all over the state, just like you all have. We need to continue to organize. We need to continue. It doesn't stop here. It doesn't stop now. I know that we can get anxious sometimes and weary sometimes, but we all need to continue to love on one another and take care of each other, because there's an army rising, right? There's an army rising. Whenever you have 140 million people living in poverty, and whenever we walk around our neighborhoods and our streets and we see people sleeping on the sidewalks and on the park benches and laying beside garbage cans trying to shoot up drugs and can't find a treatment center to get in and can't find enough beds because they don't have the right kind of insurance, then we need to talk about this and take action about this and raise our fists to their faces and say, we are not taking it anymore. We are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and this is what we're doing. We are going to be in your face morning, noon, and night, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. We are going to be building, we are going to be educating, we are going to be thinking, we are going to be talking, we are going to be disagreeing, but we are going to be loving, and we are going to be building, and we are going to leave a legacy for our children to have a better society in here. So I need all you all right now to continue fight, to hold your energy, to keep this movement going, because we need each other throughout this movement. We need each other. We need each other. We can't stop here. We can't stop now. I remember in 1989 at the Poverty Summit, I was young, 30-something year old. Maybe I wasn't 30, I don't know. But I said, I said, we are the sons and brothers and sisters and daughters and aunts and uncles of the very people who built this system. Yes. And this is ours. We need to organize and take back what's ours. People may be homeless, but they're not helpless. We may be poor, but we ain't poor. You understand? Yes. You understand? Yes. We have got to continue to organize among our sisters and brothers and our supporters and our organizations and our UU churches and everybody that has come out to help us bring this movement into where it needs to be. We are here on the Washington Mall, people, and we've got a whole week of learning together. So let's continue to love each other. I love you. We're gonna do this thing.
How can you speak more truth to power after Savina speaks? I took many things from what Savina said. But one thing is that we are not here to take a step back. We are not stepping back 50 years in history. We're not stepping back 150 years in history. We are only here to move forward. And we only do that as a movement of the people. So all power to the people.
Yeah. All power to the people.
All power to the people.
All power to the people.
When King called forward this new and unsettling force in our complacent national life, he believed that only this leadership of those who had nothing to lose could bring about the human rights movement that the nation and the world desperately needed. Today, we are in the middle of a crisis. And again, the way forward is the leadership of what of who are the most affected. Again, we are crossing the lines of division because the crisis crosses these lines already. Our society and our policies have degraded life and the environment, and instead has prioritized private, corporate, and financial interests. This is not because of scarcity, but because in the midst of great abundance and wealth, we must organize this revolution against injustice, not against the lives of the persons who are our fellow citizens, but against the structures through which the society is refusing to take the means which have been called for and which are at hand to lift the load of poverty, Dr. King said. We are the real revolutionaries. We have nothing to lose, and there are a million of us, 140 million of us. If we can take action together, we will do so with a freedom and a power that will be a new and unsettling force in our complacent national life. America, wake up! We are the new and unsettling force. We are the nonviolent army of the poor. And we have demands because we are not here to stay quiet. We demand that this nation turn its immediate attention to ending child poverty. We demand equal pay for equal work.
Yes.
We demand a guaranteed national income.
Yes.
We demand fully funded anti-poverty programs yes. that protect the welfare of all. Yes. We demand equal treatment and accessible housing, healthcare, public transportation, services for the people with disabilities. We demand relief from crushing household, student, and consumer debt.
That's right.
We demand decent and safe housing for the poor. We demand equality and the safety of all persons, regardless of their sexual orientation and gender identity. We demand the repeal of the 2017 federal tax laws. We demand a budget that promotes the general welfare. We demand the repeal of all these prohibitive legislative tax law projects that Liz was talking about. We demand that the wealthy and the corporations pay their fair share of our country's urgent needs around the decent, affordable housing, free public education, a robust social safety plan, and social security. These are our demands, and we are not taking them back. We are not planning to go anywhere till we are heard. But before we end, I wanted to start giving a big announcement of what we're going to be doing for the rest of the week. Every day, right here, at noon, there'll be lunch, and there'll be dinner at 6 here in the tent. All activities that we'll be holding this week will be right here. So all you have to look for is this beautiful clay area with this beautiful mud that reminds us of the original campaign. You'll hear beautiful people singing songs of struggle and freedom. You'll hear the good smells, and you know where to be, right here at the People's Tent. Wednesday, we have an opening session tomorrow. From 1 to 3, we'll have an organizing training. From 3 to 6, we'll be inviting all of you to join us for a community canvassing. And from 7 to 9, there'll be a story circle for people to share. If you hadn't heard, there'll be lunch and dinner in between all these things. So make sure to be here. Thursday as well, we'll be doing nonviolent direct action training from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. From 2 to 3, we'll be rallying here in the tent. From 3 to 4, we'll be doing a nonviolent direct action. And from 7:30 to 9, we'll be doing our Justice Art Movement, our cultural night. Friday, from 9 to 12 p.m., I invite you to come here, but actually invite at least 5 of your friends, because it's going to be real awesome. And it's People's History Tours. of the Resurrection City and the history of the Poor People's Campaign right here on the National Mall. We'll also be doing art and culture with the kids. Don't forget to bring your children. They're an equally important part of this campaign. They were in 68 and they are now. From 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., we'll be doing teach-ins on the campaign. And if you have a singing voice, and even if you don't have a singing voice, I'm going to join. I'm going to come in for a choir rehearsal in the evening. And if any of you have forgotten, y'all know the best part, the most exciting part, is on Saturday. 10 a.m., where you going to be? Right here. With that, I want to say thank you to the interpreters, the amazing interpreters who've been working all night. To the volunteers who've been setting up the tent and sharing food and singing with us. And to the folks back in the States, thank you for organizing these amazing watch parties. I've been to some of them. They're pretty awesome. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Again, remember, we have nowhere else to be on Saturday but here. We're going to be here not just for ourselves, but for the people who came before us and those who are yet to come. Because we are the new and unsettling force. Before we do close, I would like to invite our people's musicians, our people's singers, our Theo musicologists who have been bringing life to this event with their wonderful songs of freedom and struggle.
All right, yo! As Manolo so rightly reminded us, we are the new and unsettling force. That's the theme of our week. We're going to close it out, at least for our live stream, with this song, A New and Unsettling Force. I need you, if you're able, to stand up with me, because you can't be a new and unsettling force. Right? Sitting down. All right. And we, as we say in this movement, we stand together because we stand together. All right, you ready? Are you ready? All right, here we go. You know it well enough, I'm not gonna teach it. I think you got the hang of it this week, right? We are the new unsettling force, and we are powerful, a new unsettling force, and we're here, we're a new unsettling force for liberation, and we got nothing to lose but our chains, and we got nothing to lose but our chains. We are a new unsettling force, and we are powerful, a new unsettling force, and we're here, a new unsettling force for liberation, and we got nothing to lose but our chains, and we got nothing to lose but our chains. We are a new unsettling force, and we are powerful, a new unsettling force, and we're here, we're a new unsettling force for liberation, and we got nothing to lose but our chains, and we got nothing to lose but our chains. We are a new, let me hear ya,
unsettling force, and we are powerful, a new unsettling force, and we're here, we're a new unsettling force for liberation, and we got nothing to lose but